Hello and welcome to The Europeans, your favourite podcast about all things continental with me, Katie Lee, in very peaceful Paris. I've been to a hammam, Dominic.
Can I say, and me, Dominic Kramer, in Amsterdam.
Oh yeah, sorry.
Go straight into your anecdotes. How many weeks have we been doing this for, Katie?
Don't even care about what you're up to. Who gives a damn? Fine, tell us who you are as well.
Yeah, I'm Dominic Kramer. I'm in Amsterdam. It's also peaceful here, but I haven't been to a hammam.
Sucks to be you. Actually, it was really nice going because it reminded me of all those times that we had in... Actually, no, we never went together in Amsterdam, did we? But when my boyfriend was living in Amsterdam with you... We used to go a lot.
I went with him.
You went with him. And it's all very naked and wonderful. And I hadn't had that experience since we left the Netherlands. So it was nice. It made me feel very nostalgic. Went with my mum. So we were both there, sort of mostly naked. Bit weird, but fun, I think.
You think? You don't sound convinced.
It was definitely very cleansing. They scrub you and all of this crap comes out of your pores. It is disgusting. Disgusting, but weirdly satisfying.
Oh, sounds like you've been needing to go for a while, Katie.
I've just put off everyone from listening to this podcast. Yeah. Welcome to The Europeans, the podcast where we talk about my dead skin. How are you?
I'm fine, yeah. I've been okay, but embarrassingly, I fell for a telephone scam this week, Katie.
Oh, what happened?
They were just really good at it. They made me think that they were part of this organization, an official body, the national body for... self-employed people or entrepreneurs. And they made me think that they were calling to tell me that I should get my gas and electricity through them. Because I'm stupid and foreign, I kind of believed that. Because if you get a call from someone who knows who you are and has all your details, I thought, oh, they know that I run a business from here. That means they must be legitimate. I was kind of suspicious on the phone. And I was like, I'm not signing up to anything, am I? You can just send me an email about it. So I kind of gave him permission to send me an email about it. But then when I think back over the conversation, he was like, yeah, you're not signing up to anything now. No, don't worry. But like, if you want to cancel it, then you have to get in touch with us. And then I never got the email and I Googled them and it turns out they're like massive, awful scammer people.
But did you hand over your credit card details or anything?
No, but apparently that doesn't matter. Apparently what they do is, because they have my address and kind of a verbal agreement, although I don't think I really agree to it, they start sending threatening letters through the post about how you have to pay.
Oh my God, this is horrible.
And they automatically move your electricity and gas over to them.
This could be your last ever podcast before they do you in.
It could be, and there's no way to get in touch with them. Like if you call their customer service line, it just rings and rings and then hangs up. And if you send them an email, they just don't respond. So I'm really scared.
Oh, Dominic, that's terrible. Are you very shaken up or are you just feeling a bit sheepish?
I was quite shaken up immediately afterwards. I'd been quite cynical on the phone, but still I realized they'd kind of got away with something. And I was so annoyed because they were so charming and pushy. And usually I'm really pushy back, but I just wasn't.
Well, I'm very sad to hear that.
Thank you.
I was going to say maybe this podcast will cheer you up, but we're actually talking about a couple of quite depressing things this week, really. We're going to be talking about the mountain of plastic that the world produces every day and what Europe can do about it. With the Irish journalist Naomi O'Leary, whose footage of plastic floating in the Caribbean went viral this week.
This is the second time we've talked about plastic, isn't it? We talked about it a few months ago when the EU were launching their new plastic strategy.
Yeah.
And at the time we talked about the fact that they were suggesting a plastics tax, but actually we should clarify that that didn't make it to the final report.
It didn't. That's gone nowhere.
So it'll be interesting to have another look at the issue, which is, as you say, mounting and mounting every day.
Yay! Calm thoughts, think calm thoughts. And in Croatia, we're going to be talking... Actually, no, this is a fun one. This is a lot more positive. We're going to be talking to Daniel Martinovic. He is one of the gay rights activists behind a new children's book designed to teach kids that it's okay to have two mums or two dads.
But first, we've got Good Week, Bad Week.
Good Week, Bad Week.
Jim sent me a jingle with my own voice on it, but it was so horrendous, I am throwing it in the bin. And it gave me such empathy for how it must feel to have your voice turned into a jingle.
Yeah.
Even by someone as talented as Jim Bunn.
It's not easy being me.
Good week, bad week. Let's do it. Do you want to go first with the good?
It has been a good week for the people of Groningen. There were emotional scenes coming from the residents in this city that's up in the north of the Netherlands after the government announced plans to shut the Groningen gas field by 2030 and in the meantime to start significantly reducing production over the next few years depending on how cold it is and how necessary it is to keep some of the gas going. The reason why the government want to stop using this gas field is because of an increasing number of earthquakes in the area caused by the gas extraction. It's quite a big deal that they decided this because when it was discovered, it was the biggest natural gas field in the world. This was in the late 1950s, and it's continued to be one of the most significant sources of gas in Europe. So it's quite an amazing decision that they've decided to keep it in the ground, and the residents are very happy because they've been campaigning tirelessly. It's become quite a cause célèbre.
Because I read that like thousands of people's homes have got damaged by these earthquakes, is that right?
Yeah, it's been quite intense and they've been getting worse and more regular. So it's really good news for the residents. It's not such good news financially for the Netherlands because a lot of the wealth of the country has come from this gas field. It's been a bit of a moneymaker since they discovered it, and they're going to have to find a way to produce gas quicker or to move everyone over to electricity as quickly as possible.
I read that they're going to give people subsidies or like financial advantages for switching from gas, which seems very sensible.
Yeah, they already are doing that, but they're going to speed it up. We're actually considering moving over to getting rid of our gas boiler in my flat.
Can you do that now that you signed up for this scam electricity contract?
Oh no, I probably can't, can I? I'm probably stuck for the next 20 years.
You should probably just build a little fire in the middle of your floor there.
Yeah. Anyway, so that's good week. Who's it been a bad week for?
It's been a bad week for Julian Assange. He has, of course, been in the Ecuadorian embassy in London since 2012, trying to avoid being extradited to Sweden to face questioning over alleged sexual crimes, including a rape allegation. And yeah, as everyone knows, he's been going kind of stir crazy in there, as we all would, not going outside for 6 years. I actually interviewed him in there twice, not long after he went in, and it was pretty grim even back.
Did you go in?
Yeah. I went in there twice to interview him, so it must have been back in 2013, something like that. And yeah, it was already pretty bleak. He had this weird sun lamp thing to try and get him some natural light, but it wasn't really working. Still very pasty. Anyway, I'm getting off track. This week, things got substantially worse for someone who, you know, essentially lives and works on the internet. He had his internet cut off by the embassy because the Ecuadorians had said to him, look, listen, Julian, you know, you can't have the internet if you're going to interfere in other countries' politics. It makes things complicated for us. And Julian is in trouble with the Ecuadorians because he did some unwise tweets. And who hasn't done that, Dominic?
What?
I know you have.
Which ones are you referring to?
Anyway, in Julian's case, it was questioning the idea that Russia was behind the nerve agent attack on the spy in Britain at the beginning of this month, and criticizing Western countries who've kicked out Russian diplomats as part of that unfolding diplomatic crisis. So the Ecuadorians, this puts them in a quite tricky position because they are an embassy in London, trying to stay on good terms with the UK government. This is not the first time that they have cut his internet. They also did it in 2016, just before the US election, because they were worried that he was trying to interfere in that. And he got in trouble with them again for tweeting about Catalonia. So the embassy has said no more political tweets. I'll be quite interested to see what his tweeting is like when he does finally get the internet back, because I think it'd be quite fun if Julian Assange was only allowed to tweet like really bland posts, like pictures of his lunch or inspirational quotes about friendship, that kind of thing. I think the world would be a better place.
He's had quite a turnaround in like the eyes of the liberal media, hasn't he? Remember when he broke onto the scene and he was this like bastion of hope for opening up and exposing corruption, and now he's pretty much universally hated by progressive people.
Yeah, it's quite sad. I mean, like back when I had just graduated from journalism school, I worked for this organization called the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, and they were working with Assange. He used to come in and out, and everyone had a lot of hope and faith in what he was trying to do. It was all about transparency. And now he's just kind of like basically an internet troll who is widely regarded as just desperate for attention. It's a little bit sad, really. I think he cuts quite a sad figure, personally.
It was also a bad week for him because didn't Jeff Sessions say something about arresting him is a priority? Even though Julian has become pally with Nigel Farage and Roger Stone and some of Donald Trump's friends.
He does know how to make friends with all the best people.
Yes, absolutely.
Our first guest this week is the Irish journalist Naomi O'Leary. She is a reporter around Europe for various publications, including Politico and The Atlantic, and the co-host of a great podcast about Ireland, which we're going to be talking about a bit later. And she's coming on the show this week because she went viral. She got 3,000 retweets on some footage that she posted in the Caribbean of just horrible litter, plastic litter, washing up on what should be a beautiful, untouched island. And it's really shocking and horrible to watch. I've been getting really sad about plastic in the last couple of weeks, Dominic. I don't know about you. It's really getting to me, you know, like the waste, these stupid little plastic takeaway forks and stuff like that. I just feel like we need to be talking about it a lot more, really.
Yeah, but I feel like we are, like the tide is turning and we are starting to talk about it a lot more. I've noticed it appearing on my Facebook wall a lot more. Yeah. My favourite thing about what Naomi did is that she tagged the multinational companies on Twitter. She'd find like a Coke bottle and she'd tweet at Coke. And I thought that was genius.
Yeah, and just the sheer volume of tweets like that, it was really powerful. It just really got across how all of this crap from the world's multinational corporations has ended up on what should be this perfect, tranquil little island in the middle of nowhere. I feel kind of torn between being really depressed about just how dire the problem is and uplifted by some of the good things that have been happening. Do you want to hear a horrible statistic?
Go on.
Out of plastic waste generated since the 1960s, guess how much has been recycled?
Probably like 2%.
It's not that bad. It's 9%, but it is still pretty terrible. But there are some good things coming up. I mean, in Amsterdam, you've got that plastic-free supermarket aisle now, which is great.
Yes, we do, at the Eco Plaza. And the UK have just announced a new bottle bank scheme where you have to pay a little bit more when you buy a plastic, glass or tin container, and then you have to return it and you get the money back.
It's probably the best thing that Michael Gove has ever come up with.
Yeah, and the thing that encourages me about this whole recycling thing is that it seems to be uniting quite disparate political elements, like the Daily Mail, the right-wing rag in the UK, have been campaigning quite a lot about doing something about plastic, just as the Guardian have. It's uniting people who don't always see eye to eye politically.
It does give you hope. We are an intelligent species. I really think there is something that we can do about this. So we're going to call up Naomi in Dublin and talk about what she found in the Caribbean and what we might be able to do about it.
You went viral on social media this week. I was wondering if you could give our listeners a little background to what happened.
So I was traveling with my family actually on a sailing boat. My parents are big sailors and they did a trip. They sailed across the Atlantic and I joined them for part of it. And when we were coming up to Panama, essentially, we visited these islands. It's in the Caribbean Sea, so basically in the skinny part of the Americas where they meet. There's a whole complex of about 350 islands that is called Guna Yala, which basically means the homeland of the Guna people. And the Guna people are indigenous people that live there. And they're quite traditional. They use traditional building materials a lot and dug out canoes. And they mostly make their living by fishing and selling crafts to tourists. We anchored off of a small island that didn't have anyone living on it. It appeared out of the sea like a paradise island, you know, with these palm trees and really beautiful. And I kind of swam in on the side that was protected by the wind. So it was a beautiful, pristine beach with like white sand and palm trees like leaning out of the beach and just really beautiful giant conch shells and this kind of thing. But then I walked around and the windward side of the island where the wind hits it was completely covered, coated in just a mass of plastic waste that was brought in by the sea. The tides were just bringing in plastic rubbish. It was so thickly coated with plastic that it was impossible to walk without stepping on it. It was just like a tide of plastic. And this was an uninhabited island, so no one lives there. There's no human structure on it. The Guna people come and harvest coconuts, but no one actually lives there. So this was all waste from elsewhere that was being brought. It was just so shocking. I felt really actually sick. And it was all really recognizable brands as well. Like it was Listerine mouthwash and Dove stuff. And all these toiletries you'd recognize, like Colgate, and obviously loads of Coca-Cola products, Coca-Cola bottles, and their other brands that they have. I tried to document it as best I could. I swam back to the boat again, and then once was back somewhere with a reliable internet connection, I uploaded this stuff onto Twitter.
And predictably, your images have now gone everywhere. They're really, really shocking and horrible to look at. I know you've been doing a lot of thinking about what to do about this problem since you took the footage and since it went viral. What is Europe doing? What is the EU doing when it comes to plastic? And what more can we be doing?
In January, there was a much anticipated plastics strategy published by the European Commission. And the Commissioner, Gunther Oettinger, had said previously that this would include a plastic tax. When that was ultimately published, the plastic strategy, it didn't have a plastic tax. What it did have was targets for, I think it's like 55% of consumer product plastics to be recycled by 2030, and targets for monitoring of marine pollution by member states, and funding for research and improved waste systems. So better than nothing, but nothing really radical. The possibilities why that plastic tax didn't end up in this ultimate document was maybe pressure from the very powerful plastics lobby. That could be one. It is probably quite a complicated proposition because there's different kinds of plastics. Some are recyclable and some aren't. And it would be wise to design any such tax very carefully to make sure that it took that complexity into account and really targeted the issue in the most effective way possible. I mean, we've seen that this kind of intervention does work very well, for example, with the plastic bag levy. Countries that introduced small charges on plastic bags have seen a completely precipitous drop in their use. So that was hugely, hugely successful. People were totally able to find a way around it once there was that little charge, and they just stopped being automatically handed a free plastic bag. The only reason why you can have a one-use plastic bottle is because the true cost of it isn't reflected in that price. If the cost of the environmental damage was included in the price of that bottle, it wouldn't be one use, you know?
It does seem like the tide is turning in public opinion, and people are really starting to notice that this is something that needs dealing with. I was just saying to Katie that even a publication like the Daily Mail seems to be campaigning quite strongly towards something needing to be done.
It does seem like kind of an inflection point. Even, you know, my tweets going viral, that was the sign. You know, I really saw how it resonated with people. No one wants this outcome of these remote places being covered in plastic. Those are coral islands. They formed on top of coral, and it looked like in a few years the island would be formed of plastic.
Oh.
You know, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Have you always been on this kind of recycling bandwagon, or was it something that really like shocked you going onto this island? Did it turn a corner for you?
It did change things for me in terms of I can't pick up a plastic bottle now and not know that this is a possibility, you know, that it would be washed up on an island somewhere. In terms of what people can do, you can leave your plastic in the supermarket. If enough people do that, supermarkets might start using less of it, which would be good.
Yeah.
There's also local cleanup groups that go and clean along rivers and beaches if you're kind of an active kind of person. Obviously, reduce, reuse, recycle everything as much as possible. But it's not all down to the individual consumer, because if you try and find cleaning products for your house, for example, that aren't in plastic, it's very, very difficult. The pressure has to go the other way as well, in terms of you can pick up a phone and tell the companies that you don't want their products wrapped in plastic anymore. And you can tell local politicians as well that, you know, you want something done about this.
There is hope for us yet. Naomi, when you're not busy documenting horrible pollution in the Caribbean, you are the co-host of an excellent podcast about Ireland called The Irish Passport. Can you tell us a bit about the idea behind it?
I felt there was an Irish voice missing, essentially, internationally. It's impossible to really understand the implications of Brexit without understanding the historical context a bit. Irish reporting within Ireland is obviously towards a domestic audience that have a lot of shared knowledge and a high level of prior knowledge. So it's really hard to tune into the news in Ireland. Other international news organisations don't necessarily have a dedicated Ireland correspondent because it's just so small. Mm-hmm. So I felt there was sort of gap to bridge that. International news organisations also, unfortunately, do tend to do a bit stereotypical stories about Ireland. Yeah. It's totally understandable. It happens to all countries. Like, you know, if there's a story about France that involves Camembert or something like that, you know, it'll get written. But it's also true for Ireland. So there's definitely an international image of Ireland that doesn't really reflect its current reality, which is that it's pretty cosmopolitan, it's pretty rich. And yeah, it's just gone through a very, very rapid pace of change over the last 20 years or 30 years. Yeah.
What are a couple of your favourite episodes that might be a good introduction to your show?
I'm quite fond of The Knowledge Gap and the final episode of our season one, which is called The Invisible War. You can kind of see those two episodes as like a part A and a part B of the same story, really, which is about the strange invisibility of Ireland, and particularly Northern Ireland, in Britain. In the first one, we investigated the history curriculum in England and Wales, and we compared it to what's taught in Ireland. And we just illustrated how we have two entirely different accounts of history that people grow up on. Yeah, we have different episodes, one about Ireland and the EU. Is Irexit a thing? Is there such a thing as Irish Euroscepticism? Pretty topical now is our episode on abortion. Obviously, Ireland has one of the most restrictive abortion laws anywhere. And we're about to have a referendum on the 25th of May, where it will be decided whether or not we should remove from our constitution the constitutional ban on abortion.
Ooh, well, we might have to get in touch with you again around that time to pick your brain about that, because I think we need to talk more about that issue.
Congratulations, Naomi. You've just been hired as our unofficial Ireland correspondent.
Yeah. Bad luck.
It's an unpaid position.
I'll just let your listeners know, in case they're interested in the podcast or in the tweets that I wrote, you can find all my tweets at Naomi O'Reilly. So that's Naomi, NaomiOhreally. The podcast is called The Irish Passport, and you can find all the links on www.theirishpassport.com.
From a pretty drastic situation when it comes to plastics to a pretty optimistic situation in Croatia, where Daniel Martinovic, he's a gay father with a three-year-old child, and he is one of the founders of this organization called Rainbow Families Croatia. It's an organization that started off as a relatively small psychosocial support group for LGBTQ plus families, but it has been pushed into the spotlight because they have published their first book. It's a children's book that tells the stories of Anna, a child with two fathers, and Roko, a child with two mothers. And it's thought to be the first children's book written in Croatia that has a non-heteronormative family setup. So we're going to call him and find out about what brought him to make this book and to find out about some of the conflicting reactions to the book. There's been a bit of a media storm around it, both positive and negative. So I hope he's on the line.
He is on the line from his home in Zagreb, where he was busy making some toasted sandwiches for breakfast. So you might hear a bit of clatter, but what can I say? He's a busy dad, and dad's got to make sandwiches. I wanted to, first of all, Daniel, could you tell us a bit about how the idea for My Rainbow Family came about?
Since the passing of the law on life partnerships in 2014, there are many couples getting married, and we had like a little baby boom among the group. And people were asking, is there any literature in Croatian for them as parents and also for their kids, since they are now in this toddler preschool stages and stuff like that. And well, there is no literature in Croatian. At first, we were thinking about translating something that was available already in English, but the more we thought about it, the more we were thinking, why couldn't we make our own picture book? Because there are a couple of us that are working in publishing in our daily lives. From that idea, that followed.
What was it like for your child to read the book and see a book that featured a family more like their own?
He identified himself right away and he said, oh, that's me. But the problem is that the child in the picture book has a dog and he has a cat. When we made the book, we asked the existing families, what would you like to be inserted in the book? So there is a picture of a young boy, two mothers making him pancakes, because that's the favorite thing that they want to do. And when they saw that, they said, oh, that's us.
That's really nice. We'll get on to some of the more extreme reactions to the book. But in general, would you say the response to the book has been broadly positive?
Yes, and that really surprised us. Well, at first we thought nobody would like notice it because we are a really small group. We are a minority inside a minority, so it's not like there are thousands of us. But then the mainstream media picked it up and there has been an overwhelmingly positive reaction. Most of the picture book in Croatia, have like, there is always like the mother who cooks, the father that comes from back from the job. There are two children, one is male, other is female, and blah, blah, blah. And so there isn't anything different. We're kind of used to the far right painting us in different colors and saying stuff that isn't true and stuff like that. But this was like a really nice change of pace to get some positive feedback.
I've been quite impressed with seeing how you guys have been responding in the press to some pretty like vitriolic abuse from particularly this Catholic group Vigilare, who accused you of producing homosexual propaganda. It sounded like something that they would have said in the UK in the 1980s. But I was wondering, how do you stay calm in the light of such provocative language?
The first thing is that we have this positive support from the majority. We know that they aren't representing the Croatian society. We know that they have their own political agenda. So it's not just in Croatia, but also in France and in Slovakia and in Italy. And both West and East have those family, quote unquote, movements. And honestly, it is a sad situation for us because we are just wanting to have also a normal family life with our own children and to not have to worry if they're going to school, they'll be bullied or whatever.
There was this particularly horrible incident back in February when there was this children's festival in a town called Castella, and parents burnt a giant copy of this book in front of kids. And almost more shocking than this was the reaction from the local mayor, who just said, oh, you know what, it's traditional for them to burn something that they consider to be evil, and we don't really get involved with that. Seeing that kind of response from an official to something that to me is just clearly like an act of hate speech is horrendous.
Well, we pressed charges amongst the organizers of the children festival. We received right away feedback from people that were there that said they didn't know that this was going to happen, and that it was like also an organized act from a couple of persons that were against LGBT rights, I suppose. And we pressed charges against the organizer for spreading hate speech. I think it's really awful that this happened, and for the children that were there to witness this, and for the children that one day might want to come out to their parents.
Absolutely.
Croatia is the European Union's newest member state. You joined in 2013. I was wondering whether you've noticed any changes for you as a rainbow family within society or legally by becoming a member of the European Union.
Since entering the European Union, we received this life partnership law. So there was a huge step forward, because before that there was no law. And the far right or the religious NGOs were saying there is no homosexuality in Croatia, that this is like, a foreign thing that will be imported from the West. But we see now a much more level of acceptance. I mean, it's not perfect in any way. And it also depends where you live, because in larger cities, there is a bigger level of acceptance rather than in small ones. And also, I think with joining up to the EU, we have this mobility option that we can move to the other states, mainly for work, but also because they felt they would be safer there.
I read a really interesting comment from a political analyst the other day saying that some sections of Croatian society have got more conservative since joining the EU. And she was arguing that this is because not everyone agrees with this more liberal, progressive direction that the country is maybe going in, and they feel like they've got shut out of the process. They find themselves wanting to vent a bit. And that's why you see things like this horrible march, this far-right march that we saw last weekend of all these people in the streets marching against this women's rights convention. I just wonder what you thought about that. Is that something that you've seen? Are you worried about the rise of the far right in Croatia?
Keep in mind that I'm like a very positive person, and I tend to find something positive in everything. So maybe I'm not the right person to talk about this. But the fact is, for this march, there were 10,000 people in Zagreb, and they managed to get only 10,000 people in a country where you have 3 million inhabitants. It will be a hard struggle, but I think that we are in the right direction, so to say. And I think the picture book did much work there, because they now see that we also have a family life, and that we have, I don't want to use the word normal, but you know, normal lives, like making breakfast or wondering what will you buy for your children during the holidays for the presents and stuff like that.
I see that you did really well with some crowdfunding recently, where you raised a lot more money than you were expecting to. Final question from me, what are the plans for this book now that you've got a bit of money behind it as well?
Since we received 300% more than we asked originally, we will print more copies. But also we are starting now development of a second picture book. We want the characters from the first picture book to have many adventures. I mean, the first picture book is called My Rainbow Family, but we want to have My Rainbow Family on vacation, My Rainbow Family Goes to the Zoo, My Rainbow Family, I don't know. So the plan is to continue publishing. We have an English translation ready, and it also will be printed. And we want to have the ebook version available for everybody who wants it. We see that people want to read this book and are interested in what will happen in the future with the characters.
That that's left me feeling a little bit more cheerful about the world, and I would like to continue that sensation, Dominic.
With a happy ending. Okay, well, this happy ending is about second chances. If you think back over the past few years and think about the most important pieces of art in Europe, there's one that will be burned into your retinas because of its sheer beauty and the realism of it. I am, of course, talking about the bust of Cristiano Ronaldo that was commissioned for Madeira Airport. Do you remember it, Katie?
Who could forget it?
Yeah. If you can't remember it because you've managed to like block out the trauma of seeing it, then please Google it now to remind yourself of its uniqueness. Anyway, snark over, this bust was widely ridiculed across the internet with a wave of memes cropping up in that typically cruel fashion that the internet seems to be prone to. And as with lots of funny stories on the internet, it is actually a really sad story because the victim of this joke is a lifelong Madeiran and amateur sculptor, Emmanuel Jorge da Silva Santos. He had never made a bust before, let alone a bronze one. And at the time, he was working at the airport pushing trolleys around, and sculpting was just something he did as a hobby. He had the gumption to find the director of airports in Madeira and said, because you're naming the airport after Ronaldo, I think I should make a bust for him. And the guy agreed to it, and it was a really big deal, and it was going to make his career, and he was excited. The Bleacher Report, which is an online sports website, commissioned a feature on him and a short documentary attached. And they asked him to have another go at the sculpture and filmed him making it.
Yay.
He chose a much more neutral expression with mouth closed for Cristiano, which I think makes a big difference. And
the last one was so manic looking. He just looked completely insane. Oh.
I mean, I think teeth are really hard when you're making a bronze sculpture. And it is more of an obvious representation of him this time. But hurrah for second chances. And I hope this gives Manuel a little bit of closure. But I did actually look at the original sculpture again. And I think the criticism wasn't entirely justified because Ronaldo does just have quite a funny face in all his like cockiness and like, I'm so arrogant. So I kind of like that he was made to look weird and goofy in the first sculpture.
I don't think it was terrible. I think it really was just that expression on the first bust head was very haunting.
Yeah.
It's difficult to explain. You have to see it in the flesh. Should we go on a little pilgrimage to go and see the new one?
Let's definitely do that. I hope they put it on display at the airport as well.
I assumed that they were. Aren't they?
I don't think there was any talk of that in the Bleacher, but they definitely should.
Listeners in Madeira, if you're around the airport anytime soon, please go and report back, take a picture for us.
Yes, please do. I want to end with one quote from this amateur sculptor. He said, "It is impossible to please the Greeks and the Trojans. Neither did Jesus please everyone." So yeah, for this Easter weekend, as Santos says, Jesus didn't please everyone. His sculptor didn't please everyone, but you can always try again. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of The Europeans, and thank you to our wonderful guests, Daniel and Naomi. We will be back again next week, as usual, with some more wonderful guests, finding out what's been going on in Europe. If you have any ideas or you'd like to talk to us about what's going on where you are, then please get in touch and let us know.
Facebook.com/Europeans Podcast. You can drop us an email at europeanspodcast@gmail.com. Our Twitter is @EuropeansPod, and our website is europeanspodcast.com. Are you going to try and have a plastic-free week, Dominic?
It's so difficult in the Netherlands.
Try and have a plastic light week. That's what I'm going to do.
Okay.
I'm going to go to the market, get all my veggies. I'm going to eat in the canteen at work so I can eat off a plate, no horrible sandwich boxes. And I'm just going to try and be a little bit better.
I am always trying to be better. And since we talked about it last time, I have been trying to buy the bananas that aren't in plastic wrapping, even though I don't think they taste as good.
Do you just sit there crying into each banana but feeling really smart?
I don't think it's got anything to do with the plastic having wrapped the bananas. I just think that it happens that those bananas are better.
God damn it.
But I do recycle all my plastic, I promise.
That's a good start. Well done. Have a great week, everyone. As plastic-free as you can make it. And we'll see you next Tuesday.
Tui.
Do vidjenja. So, just one final question, which is, have you prepared a tongue twister for us?
So, there is, it's easy for us. And it goes, riba ribi grizereb.
That doesn't sound that hard.
Riba risi zigarker. Oh, no, I can't do it.
What does it mean?
One fish bites the tail of another fish, but it has so much R's and G's and B's and Z's and whatever's and you have to pronounce it as fast as possible. So it's Ribaribi Grizzareb. I think your pronunciation before was a little bit lacking.
Yeah, fair enough.
Jeez, Dominic. Get it together, honestly.